On this Erev Shabbat Shuvah, Tavshin Pei Aleph, we were holding on Daf Mesechet Erevin. Here's Mesechet Erevin, Daf Mem Zayin, brought to you from Yerushalayim Yir HaKodesh, and we are holding in the middle of the sugya of Reb Misharshia. Reb Misharshia claims at the klolim that we came up with about how to paskin, which was part of the general approach of this Mesechet, the Teresh Baal Peh. We were given all of the different klolim, what to do in a case of a machlokasin, of Rabbi Shimon, Rabbi Yehuda, Rabbi Meir, Rabbi Yossi, and so on. And Rabbi Misharshia claimed that these klolim do not really apply. We were trying to find a basis for Rabbi Misharshia's statement. We went through a couple of things that had been piskei halachas kineged the klolim. And as we pointed out, the Rabbi Misharshia doesn't prove anything because the klolim are specifically where there are no piskei halachas. So how can you possibly say where there is a psak halacha that would disprove the klolim? Okay. So we were looking for additional information about that. So that yesterday we had brought, the first raya on Daf Mem Zayin, and we got up to Ella Mihoditnat, which is the second raya on Mem Zayin, besides what we discussed earlier. So where does Reb Misharshia get the idea that there's no klal of how to paskin? Well, we have a Mishnah later on that talks about what the halacha is of Eruv Chatzeros. Now, you'll recall that the din of Eruv Chatzeros is that the Chachomim gave each individual a separate rishus. And because of the similarity of taking out from your home into an area where other people will also share a commons in a chatzer, a very relatively common thing in a public, I shouldn't say public, in a large apartment building. So you've got this commons in front, which everybody shares. If you take out from your private rishus into the commons, so it's similar, again, psychologically, to the idea of taking from rishus hayochid to rishus harabim, if we don't look at the element of the mechitzot, and instead we look at the element of the usability and the diur. So now the question is, how much does the actuality of the diur affect the definition of chotzer versus dira? Suppose people aren't there for Shabbos. You know, people left for Shabbos, they went to another city. You're the only guy that's there for Shabbos, you know. So you're saying that there's other homes there. Nobody's in the other homes. So now, I mean, does the commons become mine because I don't need an Erev with anybody else or not? So this is the question that we wanted to address over here. So somebody, as we see later on in the Mishnah, that somebody who left town and he went to live for Shabbos, he went to spend Shabbos somewhere else. He went on a trip up north, whatever. And it doesn't matter whether the person that left for Shabbos is a goy. Now, goy, obviously, he can't join an Erev, but he could certainly mess up an Erev by being present. The only way that you can change a commons that has a goy is to actually make a contract with him. We'll see what you need to do precisely. You need to buy the rights to the commons from him for Shabbos, which we'll talk later. But in this case, the guy is not going to be there for Shabbos, and he left on a trip. Doesn't matter if he's a Jew. Doesn't matter. Even if he's not going to be there for Shabbos, it's the fact that this is his home that makes the difference, and it's not his presence that makes the difference. And he asers anybody to use that chotzer without an Erev. So says Rabbi Meir. Rabbi Yehuda Eimer, that the idea over here is you cannot aser unless you're there, because diurin is not a question of how we define the rishus theoretically in terms of the diur. It's the fact that there's actually presence of other people. Rabbi Yossi says, well, it depends. If we're talking about a goy, the fact that he left town doesn't really mean very much, does it? Because, I mean, he can travel on Shabbat. So suppose he changes his mind. He's just as likely to show up in the middle of Shabbat because he came back home. So you can't view that as being sort of a siluk from his rishus. He's temporarily not there. That, I say, you have to treat it as if he's still there, Masha. In Cain, if you're talking about a Yisrael who left town, then, in fact, you don't have to worry about him, and he cancels his diur because ein derech Yisrael avo b'Shabbat. How is he going to get back home on Shabbat? Rabbi Shimon says, I don't care if he can get back on Shabbat. Suppose the guy that's living your next door neighbor went to spend Shabbos with his daughter, and his daughter lives two blocks away, so he can easily come back home. Doesn't matter. He went to stay with his daughter, and then we assume that that's his makom for Shabbos. It doesn't have anything to do with the theoretical possibility of coming home. Taina's Rabbi Shimon, he wouldn't aser. Why? Because having gone to spend Shabbos with his daughter, he's going to stay there. Shekvar yisiach da'ato, he's basically turned his mind away from his home in this chotzen. I will see later on, this is only a daughter. But if he went to spend Shabbos with his son, then since he'll probably get into some kind of fight with his daughter-in-law, he will end up coming back home. Okay, but that's a different shaila. Anyway, good. So now the question is, how does this relate to Rabbi Misharshia? Because you see, Rabbi Chama Bar Guria quoted Rav as saying that the halacha is like Rabbi Shimon, and that if the person isn't there, it doesn't matter if he can come back. Now, Taina's Rabbi Misharshia, we're saying for Rabbi Misharshia, this must be his mocha. Now, who disagrees here in this Mishnah? We're passing like Rabbi Shimon. It's Rabbi Yehuda. Rabbi Yehuda says, no, it depends if it's a Jew, it depends if it's a guy. I don't understand. Didn't we say that Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Shimon, the halacha is Rabbi Yehuda? And now we see we're paskening like Rabbi Shimon. So this must be because of Rabbi Misharshia, and we don't really pay attention to these rules of how to pasken. They apparently were said by people that are not reliable to be koveya these rules. They were said by the Amoraim that held this. I understand. Is this exactly the same case we had before? We're paskening halacha. We're saying that the halacha is like Rabbi Shimon. What does that have to do with the rule? The rule is talking about cases where we don't pasken. So Yom HaKhanami is just, all you're doing is bringing me another example of Eichad Itmar, Itmar, Eichad Olo, Itmar, Lo, Itmar. If there was no psak, then we follow the rule. Show me that that's not true. So where did Rabbi Misharshia come up with this? Okay. How about this? Miyadetana. How about this? We're going to see, actually, later on, somebody who's traveling, we already saw the basic yisod, that somebody who's traveling on Erev Shabbos, and he has no way of getting to the place where he wants to be koveya, his mokum shvisa, before it gets dark. But he could still get there because it's within 2,000 amas of where he is, right? So he's got no problem of getting there. Now, he can't be ma'ariv biraglav. He can't put an Erev there. What does he do? He can teleport there, right? But all of this is based on the Yesod that you can certainly make an Erev by being there. People are used to the idea that an Erev is food. An Erev isn't food. An Erev is Kinyan Shvisa. And however it is that we're Kinyan Shvisa, we're Kinyan Shvisa. Very important Yesod. Now, the Lashon of the Mishnah over there is, V'zehu she'amru, this is what was meant by the idea, this example of a guy traveling in Erev Shabbos, that somebody who is poor, he doesn't have any food, he can make an Erev with his feet. And therefore, this guy who's on the road is basically like the Ani, he's a poor man, because he has no way of putting food there. He doesn't have food. Rabbi Yehuda says, what's this business of Ani? It has nothing to do with whether he's poor or whether he's rich. The din of being Kona Shvisa with food is a special extension of the din of Erev. It's not just that we have a way out of needing food for an Erev. That's silly. You never need food for an Erev. The only reason we made a takona that you can make an Erev with food is because somebody who can afford it doesn't want to walk out there on Erev Shabbos. I'm busy. The guy's is, you know, his work is worth $1 million an hour. So he's not going to go out there on Erev Shabbos. He hires somebody to put a piece of bread out there for him. That's the reason that an Erev got confused with people's mind with food. The real din of Erev has nothing to do with food at all. And it's simply a special kula that we made to be mekil al ha'ashir. A rich guy who doesn't want to have to go out. Shelo yetzei v'yarev baraglav, which is the real way of making an Erev. Be there. Stand there at the moment that Shabbos is chal. This is my mokum shvisa and everything is good, right? But I don't have time for this. Okay, so then we allow you to make an Erev with food, a total inversion of the way that people normally think about the din of Erevin. And therefore, to say we were matir, an ani who doesn't have food, that's ridiculous. We're matir, an ani. We were matir, the usher, if anything. So it really has nothing to do with how much money you have. It just has to do with what's convenient, that's all. You want to go there and walk there. Please, you're entitled to go there and walk there. And as we saw, you can even teleport there. Now, What does this have to do with Rav Mishar Hashem? Well, I'll tell you. Because poor Rav Chiya Bar Ashi was tutoring Rav's son again, right? He was Chiya Bar Rav, and Rav always listened into how he was tutoring him and always made corrections, all right? So Rav is listening to him, and he's telling him that actually, Echad Ani v'Echad Asher, he's saying these words, you know, the Rav Yehuda says Echad Ani, and a voice comes from the other room and says, and teach him at the following. Halacha k'Rabbi Yehuda. You have to put that into the way you're teaching. Okay, now, I mean, if, says Rav Mishar Hashem, if we have these klalim, why do I have to tell them as part of the way I teach the Mishnah? Halacha k'Rabbi Yehuda. I'm teaching the rules. The rule is that you paskin like Rabbi Yehuda in these cases, right? So if the fact is that he would have to say beferish, tell him the halacha is like Rabbi Yehuda. So, tarti lomali, why do I need Rav to point out this two separate times? Ha'amit, didn't you say that one of the issues is that Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Yehuda, the halacha is like Rabbi Yehuda automatically? So if Rav needed to tell his son and be koveya that is part of the Mishnah, so to speak, like the gears in the Mishnah, you add a piece in the Gemara, it must be that he doesn't believe in these rules. So that shows Rabbi Mishar is correct in saying these rules don't really apply. Says the Gemara. What do you mean they don't really apply? All that you've proved is that Rav doesn't hold to them. That doesn't mean they don't apply. I mean, my kusha dilma Rav less than a klali. Very good. So Rav Mishar Hashem would like to say that Rav doesn't hold of these rules. Thank you. We appreciate that insight, and it's very valuable. But I don't understand how, if we have rules that we assumed were being kavua at the time by the Tanoim, so the fact that Rav doesn't buy into these rules means that we should ignore the rules. Maybe other people do hold it. Rabbi Yochanan quoted it. He does hold of it. I don't know what the problem is. Okay, fine. Let's try again. Maybe there's another basis for a Misharshia from the Mishnah on Yevamas. Now, here's an interesting question. Can a Yevama, whose husband died suddenly, can she get Yibum? No, because we have no idea whether she's pregnant. So even if there's no children, if it turns out that she's pregnant and in the end delivers a viable child, then if you did Yibum during that period before the child was born, there was no real chiyav of Yibum, and therefore it would be mamish an iser of eishes ish, of eishes ochiv. So how could you do that? So you certainly can't do Yibum. You have to wait for 3 months to see if there's any evidence of pregnancy. Now, how about chalitza? So you say to yourself, look, chalitza, good heavens, I have to do chalitza, the guy says, because I'm going overseas and I don't know if I'm ever coming back here and you'll never be able to get chalitza. So let me do chalitza. What's the big deal? We'll do chalitza. If it turns out you were pregnant, so then the chalitza didn't harm anybody, did it? I mean, a little bit of spit is no big deal. So I'll do the chalitza. If it turns out that you had a child, so then you're not a chalitza. If it turns out that you didn't have a child, so then fine. So then you are muteret from this point on, and everything's okay. But this is, like, very important. If I don't do it now, when am I going to do it? The halacha is you cannot do chalitza either. Why? Because by doing chalitza, you're going to establish her situation as being a chalutza. And if she is a chalutza, then she's asura to kohen. When we find out that she was actually pregnant, and she was not a chalutza, she ends up getting married to a kohen, but there's lots of people who just remember that this chalitza was done in bed. They don't know what happened afterwards, and they may come to think that a chalutza is muteret lekohuna. So because of that, we make a gezera, you cannot do chalitza. Until you have 3 months from the time of the death. Now, this actually is a very general rule, because a woman who was married before should not be able neither to get married nor to accept Kedushin until 3 months have passed from whatever event ended the previous marriage. In other words, either the death of the husband or the divorce, because we need to establish who the father is of a child. And any time that she's going to get married within 3 months, we will not be able to establish whether the first husband was the father or the second husband was the father, and we have a shorter gestation period, which you will recall was the norm and accepted norm in those days. There were two different gestational periods. Fine. What would be the problem with that? Dozens of problems. problems of Yerusha, problems of Arias. We don't know if people are marrying, problems in Yibam. I don't know if this is my brother from my father or my brother from my sister. It's a disaster. So in order to avoid all those types of issues, we need to know who a father is. And therefore, we don't allow her even to simply accept Kedushin. And we answered the entire issue, even though this is only Erisin. Nonetheless, we made a gezerah. Erisin, even though normally we don't have sexual connections during Erisin, the Rabbanan answered Erisin because of Nisuin. Unless you wait 3 months. And this is true even if the woman was a bitula. So even though our problem was that maybe she's pregnant, which is sort of unlikely if she's a bitula, to say the least, but nonetheless, the Rabbanan made a straight out takana, covering all cases that we are pretending that we're concerned for pregnancy wherever we have a second marriage, whether it's from Erisin, into Nisuin, whether it came out of Erisin or Nisuin. If it came out from Erisin, she's still a bitula. I don't care. I don't care whether we're talking about a case of an almana where the husband died or whether the husband divorced her. I don't care whether they were the first marriage was a marriage that had been brought to Nisuin, that came to the chuppah, was a consummated marriage, or whether it was still Arusa. It's all the same. There's one din. 3 months or bust. Rabbi Yehuda says, those who were Nisuot before and maybe pregnant, okay, they can't go ahead and go to the chuppah, but they can certainly go ahead and accept Kedushin, because we're not going to assume that they would have relations during Kedushin, and therefore we're not worried about who the father would be. If she was first married, she was only an Arusa and hadn't consummated the marriage, then she should even be able to go ahead and get fully married now, right? Yinasu. There's only one case we're not, because in Yehuda, there was too much of a chance that the chosen and kala would be sleeping together before the marriage. And that's because normally in most places besides Yehuda, when they made an engagement, so it's called engagement kedushin, even though it's not really what it is, it's more than that, obviously. But they did not allow the boy and the girl to spend time together alone. In Yehuda, they did allow the boy and girl to spend time together. And because of that, they got too close very often. So over there, we need to assume that they were actually sleeping together. So there, I would not allow a first marriage Arusa to go and get married Nisua, or a first marriage Nisua to go and get married by Arusa, because I'd be afraid that we're going to be confused as to who the father is. Okay, that's the sheet of Rabbi Yehuda. Rabbi Yossi says, what's the problem? You could certainly go ahead and become an Arusa. I don't care what your state was prior to this. So I don't agree, not with the Tanakama, not with Rabbi Huda. I say she can always now go ahead and be Mu'ureset. Definitely not like the Tanakama, who says, nah, she can't do anything. And so on. That I don't agree to. And furthermore, I don't agree with Rabbi Huda either, because I do not agree that you can do Nisuin in the case that the original was Erisin, like Rabbi Yehuda. So I disagree with him too. I feel you're limited always to Erisin in the second marriage until the 3 months pass. And furthermore, I allow under all circumstances Erisin even before the 3 months pass. Okay, so we have three shitot. The only time I would say do not go ahead and accept Erisin is in the case that's within a month of the husband's death. That's not very polite, because it's a din of avelut on the wife, and a wife should not be mitareset during the period of the shloshim of the death of her husband. Okay, now, what does this have to do with us and Rebbe Sharshia? Because there was this maisa like this, that Rabbi Elazar did not go to the Beis HaMedrash one day, and he meets up with Rav Asi, and Rav Asi had been in the Beis HaMedrash. So Rav Elazar said to him, so what was the sugya that you discussed today, which you come out with? So Rav Asi said, we paskin like Rabbi Yossi that Erisin is mutter for all, but only Erisin, not more than that. Now, if that's true, then what Rabbi Yochanan seems to make clear is that the Tanakama that we said at the beginning was actually a Das Yochid and not a Das Rabim, because then Rabbi Yochanan would have paskin like the Rabim and not like Rabbi Yosef. So are we saying, therefore, that it was a Yochid? Yes, 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 yes. For sure it was a Yochid, yeah, because you see this from the Braisa. Because the Braisa said that in the case that someone is a newlywed, and she likes to go all the time, as often occurs with newlyweds, she loves to go back to the family home. Oh, I got to go for Shabbos. I don't want to be alone for Shabbos. You know, all the kvetching. And so this woman actually constantly is running back to another town. Every Erev Shabbos driving out to the family home. Or so she never gets really a chance to be with her husband very much. Or she wasn't getting along with her husband. And this is going on for 3 months. She went away for 3 months, or she was not in a very good relationship with her husband for 3 months, and they were separated, basically sleeping in different bedrooms. Or maybe her husband was ill, or her husband was sick, and therefore was not sleeping with her. Or she was sick, or if she was an akara for some reason. But it had been clear that she had never had children. She'd married 3 people, never had any children, or she's old, or she's too young to have children, or maybe she's an islandess who has simonim of being sterile. Whatever the case is, her husband maybe was in jail for the past 3 months and couldn't possibly have impregnated her. Or maybe she had a miscarriage after the death of her husband, in which case we're sure that she's not pregnant. All of these cases, we're sure she's not pregnant. Nonetheless, what's the din according to the Tanna Kamma? I don't care if you're sure she's not pregnant. We made a blanket halacha, and the blanket halacha was Kulam Tzrichim Lahamtik Shlosha Chadashim. We quoted that in the name of a nameless Tanna Kamma, and now Rabbi Meir is the one in the Braita who turns out to be the Tanna Kamma. Divrei Rabbi Meir. And Rabbi Yossi is the one, like in our Mishnah, the Mishnah in Yevamos, that is Matir Le'ares V'Naseh Miyad. So we're assuming that this is the same Rabbi Yossi in the Tanna Kamma is Rabbi Yossi and Rabbi Meir, right? Okay, now let's take a look at what Rabbi Yochanan said. Why did Rabbi Yochanan need to say that the halacha is Rabbi Yossi if it's Rabbi Yossi against Rabbi Meir? Don't we have an overall rule that Rabbi Meir, Rabbi Yossi, the halacha is Rabbi Yossi? So now that shows that Rabbi Misharsha is correct, and that indeed, even though we have these klolim, and Rabbi Yochanan supposedly quoted these klolim, it was Rabbi Yaakov Bar Idi quoting him, it must be a misquote, and we don't have these rules. What's the problem? I don't understand. There is a special case over here. What is the special case? The special case relates to another rule that we haven't discussed yet. And that other rule, which is very often brought in determining halachas, that other rule is said by Shmuel. And Dilma Lafukim and Reb Nachman Amar Shmuel, maybe the reason Reb Yochanan needed to say this is because Shmuel is quoted as saying that where Rabbi Meir describes a gezeira, which is certainly the case over here, a woman who couldn't possibly be pregnant, nonetheless we make a gezeira that we treat her as if she might be pregnant, that's a gezeira. And according to Shmuel, we paskin like Rabbi Meir where he makes gezeiras. So if that's the case, I need to know that even though the general halacha would be not like Rabbi Meir and like Rabbi Yossi, as Rabbi Yochanan himself said, nonetheless, Rabbi Yochanan found it necessary to say that even in this case, where you would think maybe we should follow Shmuel's general rule that halacha is like Rabbi Meir in a gezeira, we do not. And that, in fact, this is part of the overall general rule that we will paskin like Rabbi Yossi against him. Again, we're stuck yet again. We do not have any basis for Rabbi Misharsha that we can determine. Okay, let's try one more time over here. How about this Braita, okay? The Braita is talking about the din that we learned in the Masechet Avodah Zarah, that it is usur to do business with goyim, where they might come before a holiday. They might come and sing in church about the great chesed that the good Lord Yoshke Pipik has done for them in getting the Jews to be buying from them, blah, 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 and they're making a lot of money off of these Jews, and may the good Lord bring the hearts of the Jews back to the good Lord and so on. God help us. So, in order to avoid that type of situation, the Chachomim asur to doing any kind of business at these fairs that are being run by the church next to the holiday, and there are only certain cases that you're allowed to go to a fair. So, in order to buy from people that are selling. Obviously, the fairs did not only have counters that were set up by official sellers at the fair, but people would come and do business at the fair. So there you would be allowed to buy from the goyim at the fair animals, avodim, shvachas, houses, sadot, kramim. All of these are because you are doing a mitzvah in doing so. Obviously, if you're going to be buying avodim u'shvachot, then you are rescuing these poor souls from working among people who worship Avodah Zarah, and you're bringing them into Kedushas Yisrael. Because in order to be an Eved HaShivcha for Yisrael, you have to be Mekabel Mitzvahs. So that's a tremendous, tremendous chesed that you're doing, and a mitzvah to be marbe, people that are keeping mitzvahs. In terms of buying a behema, obviously you're being mala the kedusha of the behema to be a behemas Yisrael, as opposed to a behemas Akum, also a big mitzvah. When it comes to question of botim, sodos v'chromim, you are being either, if we're talking about Eretz Yisrael, you're being marba the yishuv in Eretz Yisrael, and even to be maktin, the holdings of goyim, is a mitzvah. The less power that they have, the less place in the world that they have, the better off the world is. And when you're allowed to do that, you're even allowed to go to court in order to have the court stamp your documents. And for that matter, you as we'll see, you're even going to be allowed to go and litigate. So you can be matzil mi'adam, because by doing so, you are saving your own property when you bought them, because now you have court documents that will prevent this seller from laying claim to what you already bought. And not only that, but if you're a kohen, you'd even be allowed to travel to Chutz La'aretz in order to get to Istanbul and deal with the Turks and be able to make sure that you get the tabu, and you'd be able to litigate there, ladun, v'la'arimahem, in case they challenge you, and so on. And same way you can be metame with the tumah of Chutz La'aretz in order to achieve these important goals. You can even, if a kohen, you can even go into Beit HaKvarot. Wow, that's crazy. You can't go to Beit HaKvarot. The Beit HaKvarot, Sakadaitach, obviously not. That's a Tumah Deraisa. No, you know what we mean. We mean that you can go through a Beit HaPras, which is an Issur Derabanan. So we allow you to go through the Beit HaPras in order to be Matzil. Now, Mitamei, a kohen, by the way, this is a side point, but by the way, once we're saying what a kohen is allowed to do, he would even be allowed to travel to Chutz La'aretz to get married, if he found a good shidduch there, and he can even go to learn Torah. Rav Yehuda, what do you mean go to learn Torah? I mean, that's only if you can't find anyone in Eretz Yisrael to teach you Torah. But if there's somebody in Eretz Yisrael to teach you Torah, what heter do you have to go to Chutz La'aretz? What are you going to say? I want to go to the Mir in New York. You can't go to the Mir in Yerushalayim. What kind of craziness is that? So if you're somebody to teach you in Eretz Yisrael, how can you go to Chutz La'aretz? Well, as Rabbi Yossi says, there's no such thing. Because not everyone is the proper Rebbe for anyone. Somebody has to find the one human being in the world from whom he can learn. And you can't say such thing. Well, go ahead and learn by somebody else. I can't learn by somebody else. L'fish ein min hakol zoche adam lilmod. It's not a question of information. It's a question of how it is you're going to be learning. Furthermore, says Rabbi Yossi, I'll tell you an actual maisa. There was a maisa with Yosef HaKohen, and he went to Chutz La'aretz, which was Sidon, and he went to learn Torah over there, even though obviously at that time there were plenty of people he could learn from in Eretz Yisrael. And Rabbi Yochanan, and here's where we get to the Rabbi Sharshia issue. Rabbi Yochanan says, the halacha is Rabbi Yossi. Why do I need Rabbi Yochanan to tell me the halacha is like Rabbi Yossi? I thought we quoted Rabbi Yochanan before as saying there's a general rule. Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Yossi, we always paskin Rabbi Yossi. So you see from here that Rabbi Sharshia is right. No, says Gemara, even from here you don't see Rabbi Sharshia is right. Why? Because it could be that Rabbi Yochanan actually did hold of these kololim, and that when we quoted Rabbi Yochanan, it was true. Rabbi Yochanan had said these kololim, and nonetheless, I need to know the halacha in this case. Why? Because Maybe these halachas only apply where we have a machlokas and a mishnah between Rabbi Yossi and Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Shimon and Rabbi Meir and so on and so forth. That's where Rabbi Yochanan said, well, in cases like these, that's what he was referring to. Maybe there's no such rule in a braita. You know why? Because you can't really trust a braita. How many times do we have a braita where we say epoch? Well, we got mixed up. It was really Rabbi Yossi had said what Rabbi Shimon said. Rabbi Shimon had said what Rabbi Yehuda said. I mean, see, how can you apply a rule that is based on who said what in braita that are nowhere near as careful and reliable as a Mishnah is? So maybe Rabbi Yochanan wouldn't have said that. Therefore, Rabbi Yochanan has to tell us, even though this is a braisa, nonetheless, halacha k'Rabbi Yossi. So basically, I think we should give up by now, right? I mean, we've tried everything. We cannot find any justification for saying what Rabbi Sharshia said. As a matter of fact, Rabbi Sharshia is no idiot. And if he said this, then without any basis, I mean, that would be outrageous. We must have misquoted Rabbi Sharshia. So what Rabbi Sharshia meant was not that we don't hold of these klalim. All that he meant to say was, it's not a klal that you rely on these klalim. That's what he's saying. Meaning not everybody would accept these klalim. And he's referring to the case of Rav, where Rav clearly did not, we said Rav didn't believe in these klalim because he needed to say the halacha k'Rabbi Yossi over there, or halacha k'Rabbi Yehuda in the case of the Mishnah. Okay, so fine, so Rav doesn't hold these klalim. But Rabbi Yochanan does hold these klalim. All he's saying is that it is not a unanimous belief that we paskin like these klalim. That's all. Fine. So that concludes that part of the sugya. If there's any little girls that are here in the Daf Yomi, they have to put their noses next to the camera. Go ahead. Pinch. Okay. There. Okay. Now you can come every day. Okay, so now we get into the next sugya. Omer Yehuda, Omer Shmuel. Cheftzei nochri ein konim shvita. We were talking earlier about how far do we go about the kinyan of a mokum shvisa. And remember, we had all of those different madrigas about how to understand the presence of consciousness when it comes to a kinyan of a mokum shvisa. The lowest madriga, which dispenses with the need of consciousness entirely, was the shita of Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri, that we said, according to him, we ended up proving even objects are able to be kinyan a mokum shvisa. Now, what if those objects are owned by a goy? So here's a curious situation. A goy obviously does not have a mokum shvisa, because he doesn't have any dinim of tchumim. So he doesn't have dinim of Shabbos. So what's a shayach to say, this is where I am for Shabbos? It's absurd. Now the question is, if he owns something, so now those chafetzim are no longer free agents, so to speak, right? So, I mean, obviously, even if you would say that objects are able to be kena, if the object is owned by a human, then they become subsumed by the human consciousness. So then that would mean that if it belongs to a goy, since the goy doesn't have a makom shvisa, these objects don't have a makom shvisa. So says Rabbi Yonah Shmuel, something that appears sort of obvious, depending on what the case is. So he's saying, there's no such thing as having a makom shvisa on things that are owned by a goy. Now, that would mean, if that would be true, that if a goy would bring things in to a city that was outside of his tum, there would be no problem in you buying those things, using those things. Now, I don't know, before we made a whole big deal about that, and we said, no, if it came mechutz tum for one Jew, so then another Jew can't use it, and that we let us into the question of whether you're allowed to move it or not. So, I mean, he's saying there's no problem and there's no iser at all, other than the issue of whether a goy did the work of carrying on Shabbos for you. But if there's only, we're talking about yontev, and it's only a tum problem, there shouldn't be a problem at all, because they don't have a mokum shvisa. Now, explain to me, who was Shmuel telling us the big chiddush about? I mean, according to Rabbanan, it's a joke. I mean, according to Rabbanan, objects never have a mokum shvisa, right? So if plain objects that are all on their own don't have a mokum shvisa, kol shekein, if they're owned by a human and subsumed by his consciousness, and that human does not have a mokum shvisa, so obviously, cheftzei nochri, where they have a balim, do we need to be taught by Shmuel that they don't have a trum? Of course they don't have a trum. So then it's got to be that the Chiddush of Shmuel is a libra Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri. So Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri says, okay, if these things are objects and they're not owned, so then they get their own Makom Shvisa. Comes along Shmuel to say, yeah, but if they are owned, then they are definitely not going to have their Makom Shvisa. And that's what he's saying. When did Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri say Kodim Shvisa? That's only if they were just unowned objects. That's a mile de hefker that don't have any human that they have to be subsumed to. But Heftse Nochrim, where they do have a human, so then if that human doesn't have a Makom Shvisa, neither do the objects have a Makom Shvisa. Meisve. So now the Gemara wants to know, how do we explain this in light of the Brayse that Rishim ben Elazar Omer? Somebody borrows a kli from a goy on Yontif, and he lives in the same place that you live. Or somebody who lends a goy a kli on Erev Yontif, and was in the goy's reshus at Yontif, and then the goy brings it back to him on Yontif, and things that were just in storage outside of the city, even if they don't have an owner. So in other words, things that are found there, this is sort of a public kind of area where you dump empty bottles and stuff like that for collection. Nobody owns them. All of those things that were betoch ha-tchum when at the beginning of Shabbos, so then they would have a tchum of alpayim amas lekol ruach. So then that would mean that they do have a tchum and they can only go to the normal tchum of Shabbos. According to Tosfos, it means the tchum of the nearby city. According to Rashi, it means their own tchum. Now, what's important to us is that if a goy brings things to eat from outside of the tchum, you cannot move them. Even if they're brought on Yontev, you can't move them outside of where they are. Well, then that would mean that chafetzim of a goy actually do have a tchum, and if they were taken out of that tchum, then you're in trouble. So now, if you're going to tell me that Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri, who says that objects can be kona shvita, is ready to say that objects can be kona shvita even in this case. Okay, so I could say this is Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri. But if you're going to tell me Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri says, no, objects can be kona shvita, but not objects that are owned by a human whose das subsumes, so then this is not true according to anybody. I mean, Heftzei Anochri ain't going to Shvita, so then who is saying this? Not Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri and not the Rabbanan? So something is weird over here, says the Gemara. Okay, you're right. We misunderstood what Shmuel was saying. It's not actually true according to Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri. The truth is, according to Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri, the Chafetzim, even though they're owned by a goy, are kona a makom shvisa, and the makom shvisa is wherever it is that the goy had them. But Shmuel was going according to the Rabbanan. So you say, according to Rabbanan, it's a joke. Obviously, how would they possibly have gotten a makom shvita? So you said, isn't it pshita? No. Why is it not pshita? Because ma'o detem egzera balim denochri otu balim deYisrael. Look, you really think that the man in the street is so smart that he understands that there's a fundamental difference between coming from outside of the tchum when you're owned by a Jew, or coming outside of the tchum when you're owned by a goy, or coming outside of the tchum when you're not owned at all? So because of that, we had to make it a very simple halacha. Things that come from outside of the tchum, you're not allowed to move. That's all. So you might have thought that I'd have to make such a gezeira. And in fact, that really is the din according to, well, as we said, Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri. Comes along Shmuel to say, according to the Rabbanan, there is no such gezeira. And Rabbi Chiya bar Avin Rabbi Yochanan said that actually Heftze Nochrim are koinim shvita because of the gezeira balam de Nochru otu balam de Yisrael, which is the way that we just understood this. I'll leave it to Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri. So then that would mean, and by the way, this is how we paskin, okay? So that would mean that you could really get yourself into trouble. Let's say you lent something Erev Shabbos, or lent something Erev Yontif to a goy. It was in his reshus at the time of the chalos of Yontif. He brings it back to you from outside of the tchum on Yontif. You cannot take it to be part of your tchum. Not allowed to move it outside of its arba amos, or if it's a deer, visar, or a walled city, whatever. I mean, whatever, it was enclosed, but you can't move it out of that enclosure. So this would have some very particular hashlachot in terms of the halacha, and the same thing would be in terms of a goy who's bringing his own things to sell. So again, if it would be mi'chutz l'tchum, you wouldn't be able to move it, or you wouldn't be able to move it outside of its enclosure. I mean, we had to, when Harry Potter was being delivered in London, and the family was in London, and of course there was no way that my children were going to not move the Harry Potter if it was delivered mi'chutz l'tchum. On this was terrible, so we actually ended up researching where Harry Potter was being stored on Erev Yontif. And I forgot which one it was. Maybe it was number 5, but I think, remember, it was like on a Yontif. Maybe it was.
And it was being released midnight on Friday night. Yeah. The Jews had access.
Yes. To yes. Yes. So they gave a special heter that. Rowling gave a special hat that the Jews were allowed to get it before Shabbos, because otherwise they wouldn't be able to use it anyway. So what we had is a deal with the mailman that the mailman would put it inside of the doorway, so that even if it came from outside, there wouldn't be a problem of bringing it in. What can I tell you? But thank God. I mean, obviously we had to order about 10 different copies so that nobody's going to wait for anybody else. So. Anyway, so they deposited the Harry Potter inside the house with a big salute. Okay. All right.
The postman at Camp Sternberg broke his back because all the parents sent their daughters the book, and it was so heavy.
Okay. So now we had an actual maisa where some goyim brought these rams to this town of Mavrachta, and they came on Yontif. And that was from outside of the Tchum. And what happened was that Rava said that the people from Mechuza would be allowed to buy these rams and bring them back to Mechuza, because they had a Erev, they had made an Erev, even though Lamaisa Mavrachta was outside of the Tchum of where these rams were before. So Ravina said to Rava, wait a second. What are you paskening like over here? Because you held, like Shmuel, the Omer of Yerama Shmuel, Cheftzei Nochrin, Ein Koinim Shvisa. But remember that Rabbi Yochanan says the opposite, and the klal is, it is a new klal, that where you have a machlokas between Shmuel and Rabbi Yochanan, the halacha is like Rabbi Yochanan, and Rabbi Chiya Bar Avin quoted Rabbi Yochanan as saying, as we just said, that Cheftzei Nochrim are Koinim Shvista because of the gzera that people would get confused between a Goyish owner and a Jewish owner. So as soon as Rava heard that, he realized, oh my God, I made a mistake. So he got up and he changed the Psak Halacha, and he said, okay, these can only be sold to people who live in Mavrachta, because even though these are outside of the Tchum, even from Mavrachta, but Mavrachta is a city, and therefore the entire city is considered to be the Arba Amos. Now, this is a problem, right? Because remember that according to Rashi, the Arba Amos that we say is a city is only in a city with a wall. Remember that? So then we would have to say that Mavrachta is a city with a wall. Tosfos actually paskens like this as well. And Tosfos says, yes, indeed, Mavrachta is a city with a wall. Not only that, but Tosfos says, note that when we're talking about an area with a wall, it would also need to be mukaf l'dira, because these halachas relate to the halachas of Shabbos as well. If we're going to be koveya that the mechitzas give a shame of one mokam, then it would have to be that if it's larger than Beit Sa'atayim, it would need to be mukaf l'dira. Tosfos also sets down a general rule that in his time, most of the small towns actually were built in such a way that they were mukaf l'dira. Remember, things were pretty bad once upon a time. They had these magefot in which you never knew if people were going to wear masks when they came into town. And they had watchmen, they had to build walls around the cities and so on. So the norm was that first the town was settled, and then they would build the wall, which means it was mukaf l'dira, because remember, that is a din in purpose, not in current usage. It was one of our important yesedas. So Tosfos finally raises the issue. And remember that this was something that we had pointed out earlier. Tosfos finally raises the issue of why is this different from the sugya that we had before, where we said, according to Rava, we will view an entire area, even if it's just your own Arba Amas. That your own Arba Amas are considered to be a completely enclosed area. And therefore, if you put your Erev there, then the same thing would be, he included the din of Ibura Shel'ir there, remember? And he said, as long as it's in the Ibura Shel'ir, now Ibura Shel'ir is even the area that's outside of the homes of a city. It's not referring to a city that has walls. And he's saying that nonetheless, where we would draw the tchum, the gabi the dinim of Shabbat, is all considered to be filled up. Well, there's no walls in the Ibura Shel'ir, and yet we considered it to be all Ka'arba Amas, even though there's no Mechitza. So how do we explain that as opposed to over here? So the difference, says Tosfos, says, is that if you're coming Michutz L'Tchum, you would have to deal with it in terms of the halacha of the dinim of Mechitzas from Shabbos. But if you're coming in that area, that was your Makom Shvisa, and you're in it, then you're coming from the dinim of Tchumim and Erevin. So in terms of the dinim of Tchumim and Erevin, and remember, as we've been talking about these very carefully choreographed dances between the dinim of Shabbos and the dinim of Erevin, and the first place that we met the strange halacha, that you can have something that's called Reshus HaYochid for Erevin, even though it would be Reshus HaRav, you'd be Chayev Skila if you carried from the tree to where your Erev is. But for Erevin, it's considered to be in the same place as your Erev. So again, that depends. Where we're talking about coming from Chutz L'Tchum, now you're not actually able to apply the Din of Erevin. You're outside of the Din of Erevin. So what are you coming to define? You're coming to define the Din of a Mechitza. Is this Mechitza one place or not? That's defined by the Shabbos Mechitzas. So if you have an area that was Mukaf Ladira, it would all be one area. But otherwise, if we pass it like Reb Gamliel, obviously, that Dir Vesar or anything else that's considered to be Mukaf Ladira is considered to be Kulo Ke'arba Amis. Okay, this is wonderful to find, once again, these lovely interrelationships. This is something we've been keeping really in the back of our minds this whole period, is how exactly to square Rashi's opinion. We mentioned it right then and there. How do we square Rashi's opinion with the din of Rava? And finally, Tosfos addresses it here very, very clearly and making, once again, these wonderful distinctions between the set of dinim that are Erevin sets or the set of dinim that are Shabbos sets in terms of definitions of Reshus HaYochid and Reshus HaRabbi.